This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
Now listen to this. You are listening to AWOL Radio on CKMS The Sound 100.3 FM in Waterloo. We are also podcasting on the Rabble Podcast Network at rabble.ca, and you can find AWOL on the web at peaceculture.org.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to Radio Basics, Kitchener-Waterloo. I am back from Ireland, and we have with us a guest from the 32-county sovereignty movement, Francis Mackey. How are you doing today?
Doing very well. Thank you, Julian.
I kind of actually already introduced you, so that kind of goes into the first question, but introduce yourself and your organization, please.
Yeah, I'm Francis Mackey, as you said. I'm the national chairman here in Ireland of the 32-county sovereignty movement. The sovereignty movement, for your listeners who are not familiar with us, was set up in 1997. In the lead up to the Good Friday Agreement in 1998. And we were set up specifically to uphold and protect the sovereignty of the Irish nation, which was going to continue to be violated under the Good Friday Agreement.
So what exactly are the aims and objectives of the 32-county sovereignty movement?
In simple terms, it's to end British rule in Ireland and restore sovereignty back to the Irish people of the 32 counties of Ireland. The violation of our sovereignty has been ongoing for centuries, and there have been many attempts by the occupying power of the British government to normalise British rule in Ireland by having that rule implemented and administered by the Irish people. And prior to the Easter Rising of 1916, it was the Home Rule Party who were involved in preparing to do that. The 1916 Rising scuppered their attempts, and following an election in 1918, the Irish people voted overwhelmingly for the Republican position, and the first Dáil Éireann was put in place in January 1919. The British government refused to accept that position at that time, and through the threat of a terrible war, imposed partition in Ireland. And it has always been the position of the British government to have some element of home rule attached to their presence here, and that's exactly what the Good Friday Agreement achieved for the British government, to have Irish natives administering British rule in Ireland, in Stormont.
So it's been over a decade, possibly more, since the Good Friday Agreement was put into place. What, if anything, has changed since that?
Yeah, well, the Good Friday Agreement achieved the British government's objectives of having the Home Rule parties administer their rule. Fundamentally, nothing has changed. The violation of Irish national sovereignty continues. Republicans continue to oppose it, with the exception of those who call themselves Republicans in Sinn Féin, and they administer British rule. So, effectively, nothing has changed. We've had tinkering with British policing in Ireland. We've had change of uniform, change of name. But it's the same old political policing against Republicans, against anyone who opposes British rule in Ireland. And the police are there to politically police British rule. So, in effect, nothing fundamentally has changed since the Provisional IRA called their ceasefire in 1994. There has what a lot of the media outlets here would call a relative peace. And I think it's important threaten to counteract that type of propaganda, that Republicans are not the people who are causing the conflict or are not opposed to peace. It is the British government and the manipulative fashion in which they have carried out their business here that sees a continuation of the conflict. The British government have no rights in Ireland whatsoever. No Irish person has voted for the British government to be here. So in context, the British position is an illegal position, and sadly it's upheld by former comrades in Sinn Féin who are administering British rule at this point in time.
Before we go to a song in a bit, one of the things that I've noticed when I was in Ardoin with the murals was some of the murals being painted over, particularly by organizations such as the Lottery. And talking to people there, it really struck me that there was a process of historical revisionism. And I just like your analysis of the process of historical revisionism, normalization, and what are the aims and objectives, particularly considering the fact that every single person I've met there has, in one way or another, been directly affected by colonialism and British rule.
Yeah, I think once the parties here, particularly the Irish Nationalist parties, accepted that British rule was continuing and accepted that they were going to administer it, then it was their role and aims and objectives to end any of the historical context of which they existed, and that they create the new scenario of this is new, that is old, that is all history, it's gone. The situation between the British and Irish constitutionally is now settled. So that is the message that they want to send out to the world, that the constitutional issue in Ireland is settled, when in fact they know, and the Irish people know, that it is not settled, that the violation of sovereignty continues. And to get rid of the murals is typical of the present day establishment parties to end that era in which they were involved and wipe it out of our history for our young people. And sadly that is the situation, but we as Republicans have to educate our young people and oppose any such revisionism has taken place, because normalization of British rule is not an acceptable position for us.
Okay, we are now going to go to a song by Kieran Murphy. As everyone who listens to the show knows, is one of my favorite singers. I never had a chance to meet him when I was down there, but next year when I come down, I hope to meet him. And we're going to listen to the song Che Guevara Shirt, which is a really amazing sound. This is Radio Basics 100.3 Sound FM, Free Speech Fridays, and we have with us the chairman of the 32-county sovereignty movement, Francis Mackey.
In a land where cops were Che Guevara t-shirts that were made by children's hands, and people think a socialist republic is a sweatshop in Strabane. And Derry lads don't dare to cross a border, for they'd end up on remand. Oh, it's hard to speak your mind, boys, in the promised land. They laugh at us They're calling me a dreamer when I talk of sharing. Hard to pay the bills, boys, when you're on the run. Ministers with jail on Irish rebels in the name of Bobby Sands. Oh, it's hard to speak your mind, boys. Or you might get left behind, boys. Ah, but I'll be speaking my voice in the promised land.
This is Radio Basics 100.3 Sound FM, and it is Julian Ickham doing the programming today. I am back, and we have with us the chairman of the 32-County Sovereignty Movement, Francis Mackey. We were just talking about normalizations, the 32-county sovereignty movement, and what's going on right there. So as someone who just got back from Ireland, I was really surprised by the level of divisiveness among true Republicans. Coming here from Canada, where we have a lot of people from Ireland, like we have various different issues, like fear of people speaking out, fear of reprisals for having your picture taken at something that is seen as a 32 function or an independent function. But this serious divisiveness was really surprising to me. So what is your analysis of this?
Yes, sadly there is quite a large division across the Republican base since 1998, and it's interpretation from different levels of thinking within Republicanism. Some believe and have emphasis on the political party model. Some have emphasis on a movement of a revolutionary nature, and others, for whatever reason, their manifesto or constitution is unclear what it is they want outside of ending British rule. And in that context, the fractures that exist within republicanism in Ireland is very obvious. But I think also that one has to take into consideration the hand of colonialism and imperialism that this suits and where all of this is coming from. However, in recent times, a lot of the organizations, not all of them, but a lot of the organizations have publicly accepted that sovereignty is the issue, and to develop that further, we would hope that the debate across the Republican base would be based on the issue of sovereignty in the first instance as a unifying force within republicanism, and to develop then how best it is to come together in the future. In relation to that divisiveness, we have only to look at the revisionists and the recent visit to England by the president of the 26 counties and Sinn Féin's Martin McGuinness, etc. They realised from their position that to send a message of in a unified manner, they had to come together, whether it was the Queen's visit to Ireland or their visit to the Queen. And that has been hailed by the establishment as this great reaching out of friendship, etc., etc., and portraying to the world that the conflict in Ireland is over. Now, from a Republican perspective, and the opposite side of that coin, I believe Republicans, in preparation for the centenary of the 1916 rising, which is just 2 years away, that Republicans do need to come together under a unifying banner. And I believe the proclamation of 1916 can be that unifying factor to be developed in the next 2 years for the centenary, because all of the groups in recent times have called for unity. And I believe the unifying factor can be the preparations by Republicans for 2016. And in that context, we have to get our message out in a unified fashion to the world that the conflict is not over in Ireland, that the violation of Irish national sovereignty continues, and that as Republicans, we have to get that message across the world.
I just want to ask a follow-up question before I go into the next follow-up question. One of the issues I had coming back was trying to explain to people that the conflict wasn't over, and I was just explaining things such as the peace walls. I was explaining how hard it is to get around at Belfast. I was explaining about loyalist pipe bombs targeting civilians, including Romanians. But there is this perception in the media that the conflict is over. Why do you think this is, and why do you think there is a general media blackout on the situation in the North that even progressive people and people who are active such as on questions such as Colombia or Cuba or other such things have no idea what is going on there?
Yeah, I think this is very deliberate by an establishment and compliant media to send that message across the world. Just as McGuinness and the politicians in Dublin and in Westminster and London came together to say the constitutional question was settled. That is the message that they want across the world. So the compliant media are very deliberately blanking out all of the signs and symptoms of conflict in the occupied territory. Yes, in Belfast the peace walls exist to keep a religious divide as well as a political divide between unionism and nationalists, between Protestant and Catholic. But that Protestants and Catholics and religion are not the core cause of the conflict. It suits the British government at times to say it's a religious war, it's two communities and all of that. But the core issue is sovereignty. In relation to all of the attacks across the sectarian divide, that's been propagated by the system of governance that has been put in place here. There is unionism and republicanism, stroke nationalism in the electoral field, and sectarianism is propagated to keep two main political parties in government, one from the unionist side and Sinn Féin on the nationalist side, and it suits those politicians for that to be propagated so that the voting patterns will remain along a sectarian line. In the meantime, the bread and butter issues and the issues which affects the working class people are not dealt with by those politicians in government. So it's all part and parcel of the bigger package and the bigger picture to have that sectarianism at a localized level at the same time prevent it from getting out across the world.
Getting back to the issue of unity, several organizations, including the 32-county sovereignty movement, have been pushing for unity of all progressive Republicans. You sort of touched on this earlier, but why do you think this is necessary? Maybe if you can expand on like the necessity of unity at this point in time.
I think unity of purpose is strength, and sends a very positive message from the Republican base on the issues that are relevant to the people of Ireland. Division causes the fractures of division causes organizations to compete with each other rather than complement each other. So unity is something that we see as being important to counteract the propaganda that's been used against us by not alone Stormont, Westminster, Leinster House, and the compliant media. So every time that the media mention us in Ireland, they call us dissident, which is a negative to start with. And they refer to us in such a negative way, whether it's a link to the IRA or Oglin Aherne or whoever. And this is the type of language which they use in a negative way to keep us divided. Republican unity is something which we feel very strong about, and we believe that in working with a unity of purpose in preparation for 2016, which I've touched on earlier, that sends a more powerful message in unity, not alone across the island of Ireland, across Europe, but across the world, that we haven't, we're not a fractured bunch of dissidents, but rather principled Republicans who are prepared to stand together and expose what has happened in the Good Friday Agreement, expose what is the result of the violation of sovereignty in our country, and work together to build the momentum to end British rule and allow the Irish people the right to national self-determination in electing the government that they want. But as a prerequisite to all of that, the British government, being an illegal force in our country, should relinquish their illegal sovereign claim.
Well, one last question, and we're going to go to another song, and then we'll come back, because we do have a few more questions, and we are honored to have you on the show. I observe that there's a campaign to darken Republicans and an attempt to criminalize political discourse. For example, if you buy any sort of magazine in Ireland, it's always IRA gang, or you were mentioning dissidents and whatever, and there's attempts to link Republicans to organized crime and just darken people's name on hearsay, that sort of stuff. Who is behind this, and what are the strategies to break this attempt at marginalizing political discourse and breaking the silence and fear of speaking?
This has been very deliberate practice by the establishment, both North and South, to deliberately blacken the name of genuine, principled Republicans. And this was very evident in the lead-up to the murder of volunteer Alan Ryan in Dublin, where there was an unprecedented level of attack on Alan Ryan to link him to criminality, to all sorts of stuff that was totally unfounded, totally untrue. There wasn't a shred of evidence to back up any of the stories that was being carried in the Irish press at that point in time. And that led to, effectively, his murder. And I think that the turnout at his funeral showed beyond a shadow of a doubt that this was a principled Republican who deserved the very best in the funeral that he received in Dublin. It was one of the largest funerals ever seen in recent times in the capital city of Ireland. So that put lie to the downright lies that the media were pumping out against this individual. Those same lies are pumped out day and daily against individuals and against organizations in an attempt to criminalize the Republican struggle. But we have obviously a lot of work to do continually to counteract that. pursue our aims and objectives in a manner which is principled based on the Republican position. And I believe that by being involved with our communities and working with our communities, that we can put lie to that those allegations that are put out against us.
Okay, we're going to go to another song, and then we will return back. This is Free Speech Fridays at 100.3 Sound FM, Radio Basics. I, Julian Ickham, am your host this week, and we have with us the National Chair of the 32 County Sovereignty Movement, Francis Mackey. Please stay tuned.
While I'm sitting in the backseat of this car, my feet are getting cold, but it's not far. And the doors will soon fly open with a whack, and when they do, there'll be no turning back. When they do, there'll be no turning back. I'm having second thoughts about this game, but I'm old enough and I've just got me to blame. Back. All I want to do now is turn back. To do now is turn back.
This is Radio Basics 100.3 Sound FM on Free Speech Fridays. I, Julian Ickham, am your host, and we have with us Francis Mackey from the 32 County Sovereignty Movement on the air with us. One of the issues that the 32s are pushing for is national sovereignty, an issue that Indigenous people here know quite a bit about. And recently there has been a push in marginalized communities to push forward the PSNI model of community policing, the so-called Truth and Reconciliation Commission that no one really knows anything about, but it's supposedly happening right now here in North America. On Stolen Turtle Island, and all sorts of other things that the colonialists have been trying to implement there. Tell us a little bit about the PSNI community policing, truth and reconciliation, and all that sort of stuff that they're trying to use here on Indigenous and marginalized communities.
Yeah, well, from a sovereignty point of view, we would urge you to have a lot of caution in accepting this model of policing based on the PSNI here in the occupied territory of Ireland. The PSNI was little more than a name change from the old RUC, and they are political in the complete sense in that they are involved directly in the arrest, in the abuse of Republicans. They target Republicans on a daily basis. And at the same time, the political groupings who have accepted British rule, have accepted British policing, have set up policing boards, have set up community groups to deal with policing. And it's all part and parcel of the normalisation of the, in this country, the normalisation of British rule in Ireland, the normalisation of police walking around the local estates or driving around in the rural context, and to make that police force an acceptable police force. And there is growing concern in Ireland with the political policing aspect of the PSNI. And just to see that there's a dark side to this model of policing in Ireland with the arrest of the Sinn Féin leader, Gerry Adams. And it's hypocritical for Martin McGuinness to talk about a dark side within the PSNI, to talk about rogue elements within the PSNI, when they are the very party who accepted the change in policing at the time and told the Irish people that the dark side of policing from the RUC were gone, and told the Irish people that they would hold that policing model to account on everything. We know that's not true. We know we have political prisoners incarcerated in McGabry Hyde Bank. We know that the police daily target Republicans specifically for their politics, and for the slightest of issues, arrest and give Republicans a criminal record as part and parcel of the overall British strategy here in Ireland. And I suspect that in North America, and the whole issue of Indigenous people, that the normalisation model of policing is to encourage those people to come in and be part of the policing of their own community and all of that, so that the model becomes acceptable. And here in Ireland, it's not working. It should not be acceptable anywhere across the world, because it's there for a specific purpose. The purpose of, in this case here in Ireland, the purpose of the British government and policing British rule in Ireland. The model is designed specifically to discriminate against the Republican people.
Just building on that question, since the U.S. Was defeated in Vietnam, we've seen in El Salvador, in Latin America, in Colombia, through the School of Americas, and all over the world, this process called Vietnamization, where you hire and you get the Vietnamese people to kill their own people for the benefit of colonialism. Would you be able to compare and contrast this process of Vietnamization to the PSNI and their attempts to further divide the community on sectarian lines by pushing this idea of help your community, be a Catholic police officer, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think it's been encouraged here by the establishment parties, particularly Sinn Féin, who want to encourage young Catholics to join the PSNI. And that's all part and parcel of the normalisation process to make the PSNI an acceptable level of policing, whilst at the same time that same police force targets Republicans on a day-to-day basis. And indeed, in the past number of years, one of those Catholic policemen was killed as a result of a Republican booby trap under his car. And in that context, you know, the people who encouraged him to join the PSNI in the first instance by telling him that this was a reformed police force when it was not, is have to hold the death of that young policeman and that young Catholic. They have to accept a responsibility in all of that. But yes, the PSNI have, at this point in time, not killed anyone. But at the same time, I believe that just like their predecessor, the RUC, their role is to politically police British rule, and someday they may kill someone as part of that. So the Vietnamese of Ireland is the PSNI model, and it's not a good model of policing. It has a political content and is aimed directly at the people who oppose the establishment.
One of the things that I noticed there, those of you who know me know I don't dress like the typical tourist or stuff is I would just sit in coffee shops and people would come up to try and find out who I was, what I was about, and once in a while I am quiet to hear what other people have to say. And one thing I've noticed, whether it was the D Company march on Saturday or maybe it was the Sunday, I forget what day it was, or just sitting in a coffee shop, is that many people are disillusioned with the outcome of the GFA, from people talking about the loss of life for nothing, or people talking about Sinn Féin implementing austerity and all that sort of stuff. There is a growing sense of passive support. How do you think this can be turned into active support, and what obstacles does your organization face?
Your observation is totally correct. There, in recent years, there has been a sea change of attitude within the Republican base and within the Nationalist people, and they see that the Good Friday Agreement was not what they signed up to, was not what they agreed to, and that it was something totally different, and that those who canvassed their support for the Good Friday Agreement effectively told them lies. That passive support is growing in the Republican across the Republican base here. However, the fractures within Republicans is possibly the biggest obstacle that we would face in harnessing that type of support. However, I also believe that the other aspect of our position is making sovereignty relevant to the people, and that needs to be done through community and social programs. And in Derry, where you spoke yourself, Julian, there is obviously a good sense of community in Derry, and our people are involved working with the community and with the community groups, particularly in the working class area of Craigan. And that turnout of 400 or 500 people at the Easter commemoration on Easter Monday showed that support in a better way than I could explain it to you, because the work of our people in that area has paid dividends there and has shown that the people there have come out in support of the 32 County Sovereignty Movement's position in their area. And I believe more and more types of social and community activity is needed alongside the unifying of purpose of other Republican groupings to bring to the people of Ireland that we are not what the establishment says, and we are not the propaganda that they use against us, but rather that we are ordinary, decent and principled people living in their communities, working in their communities with them on the issues in which that affects them, whether it's austerity, cutbacks or whatever. And you know, in Ireland, the fall of the economy, the collapse of the economy due to the bankers' crisis is unforgivable, and yet the Irish people are being made pay for all of that. I think from a Republican point of view that we can identify with the working class people. We can work with them, and until such times as Republicans develop that type of strategy, I think we will remain aloof from the very people who are showing that passive support.
Just to build on that question, a lot of the work that I've done politically has been mobilizing communities to deal with issues such as the drug problem, such as people getting cut off of social assistance, suicide, that sort of thing on a political basis, whether that was in early in the late 90s doing work with the Youth Collective, starting our own drop-in center, to working at government-paid jobs in the Arctic. The one thing I noticed is that that when people are given a correct and proper analysis in terms of community work, that your enemy is not each other, that we shouldn't be killing and stabbing each other for dime bags, which is what the capitalist class wants, or that sort of thing, people get on board. When people see that the police can be resisted, that the state can be resisted through legal, political methods, such as blockades and stuff, semi-legal, whatever, civil disobedience, that sort of thing, people get on board and mobilize and unify. I know you don't work at the CCC, but can you comment in terms of what you've observed around this sort of stuff in terms of building people's organization that actually meet the needs of people as opposed to empty rhetoric?
Yeah, well, I think the sovereignty movement identified this some 2 years ago when we brought out the model of the community council. And the vision at that point in time was that the community council would operate outside of the establishment. Now, that's more difficult, obviously, from finance and all of that. Whereas in the Craigan Community Collective, the grouping is within the structures of, or the umbrella of, the overall community funding, which is governed by the city council in Derry. Nevertheless, the collective has done extremely good work in the Craigan area, where young people, for whatever reason, got into trouble with the law, got into trouble with Sinn Féin, got into trouble with drugs or drug dealers or whatever. And the community network there was fit to deal with that in such a way to assist young people out of the dilemmas that they had found themselves in. And by treating them as individuals and as human beings, it has proven to be a much better way of dealing with problems in that area. They have also identified all of the issues affecting their community. The lack of jobs, the lack of funding, the lack of proper social housing, the lack of things that a lot of us take for granted, the facilities that's needed in the area. And groups like the CCC can have a very strong voice if developed across the island of Ireland. And in relation to that, we're involved presently in a lot of research in relation to the drug problems that affect Ireland as a whole, and specifically in the larger urban centres such as Dublin and Cork and Belfast. And we're in the process of putting together a document researched alongside people who are involved in the social context of, on the establishment context of dealing with the drugs problem. And we've discovered that the people who are employed by the establishment to deal with these problems do not have the resources, is what they're telling us. It's a revolving door syndrome in relation to it, and most of the social workers assigned to it after a very short period of time lose the vision and lose the will to pursue particular angles. And it is hoped that in the incoming months that this document will be launched, circulated to other Republican organisations and to loyalist organisations and unionist parties as a model to look at dealing with those that type of problem of drugs. And if that is accepted as a good model or template, well, then all of the other issues can be developed along a similar line. So, in short, yes, the work of community groups like CCC is very important to us.
I do want to ask another follow-up question about Cuba and the special period and stuff, but we have other questions to get to, maybe some other time, but that is a very good analysis. One of the things I did when I was down there was I visited McGobbery, and I visited quite a few jails here. We actually had a noise demo yesterday, and we kind of visited Nikki Kish and everyone at the GVI, which we can talk about some other time. But I was very shocked to see, you know, someone going to visit, having to see the go through the dogs, having to give your fingerprint, all that sort of stuff. It felt very, very invasive, and just seeing the overcrowding in the prison room where you have the visits, people running around, kids and what have you. It was very, very eye-opening. So just explain to us what the situation in McGobbery is, what are the prisoners facing, and what can we do here on colonized Turtle Island or other places to assist the prisoners?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, we would call for the release of all political prisoners. And the situation is, as you have quite rightly outlined, overcrowding. The prisoners are basically political hostages. They are strip searched on a regular basis, and I mean forcibly strip searched, whereby a riot squad with shields and helmets will physically remove the individual's clothing to their naked. Freedom of movement. They don't have free association whatsoever. And a lot of the charges against those men are trumped up charges, which are effectively internment by remand, because the judicial system here is so corrupt that you could be held in jail for 3 years before your case would reach a conclusion. And if you are released and you won your case and found not guilty, you've just had 3 years interned by remand. It is a corrupt system whatsoever. And just today, we've had one of those prisoners in McGobbery, Damien McLaughlin, get bail because the judge said that given the nature of the system in place, that it could be, now he had served 18 months, and the judge said it could be at least 2 more years before his trial would come up, and he was granting him bail. However, the conditions of the bail was such that Damien McLaughlin, being a principled person, refused to accept them. One of the things, the main thing that was opposed was the use of electronic tagging. In this country, electronic tagging is mainly associated with sex offenders and paedophiles. And this is a form of criminalization of Republicans to accept being forced to accept this electronic tag. So Damien McLaughlin, principled fellow that he is, refused to accept that type of condition. He refused to allow himself to be criminalised in that way. And I'm just told before coming on air tonight that he intends, his solicitor has been briefed to fight this unjust and unnecessary form of bail condition. So that is the type of things that's going on. There is a local person from County Tyrone here. He's now in his third year of isolation, and we don't know why there is no reason other than the prison governor and the establishment are saying his life would be in danger if he was allowed to go to the Republican wing. The Republican prisoners in the two wings, Row 3 and Row 4, have assured the prison governor that this young man's life and well-being is not in any jeopardy or in any danger from them in any shape or form. Yet the establishment seem to want to break this fella by keeping him in isolation 24 hours a day for the last 3 years. And they have put extreme pressure on him to become an agent and informer. They have taken him out of McGabbery Jail to the Antrim Police Station, and MI5 have put pressure on him to become an informer, and he has refused. So that is the type of psychological pressure that they're putting on this young man. Unnecessary. It's torture, to say in the least. And that is the type of things that we would, as Republicans, would want the international community to hear. And from our point of view, seeking engagement with other like-minded people at an international level to keep these issues highlighted. I think we're living in an era of social media, and I believe that we're still not using that to its full potential to get our message out across the world.
Just building on that, one of the interesting cases here, which is why we chose the GVI as well as to protest yesterday for May Day to bring some spirit, is the case of Ashley Smith, who I don't remember all the facts offhand, but she's been held in isolation since she was 8 or 9 for throwing a crab apple at a postal worker. She hung herself while the screws sat by and watched because they were given orders to ignore any sort of self-harm because it was seen as an attention-seeking behavior, but she spent most of her life in isolation. I may be wrong about the age when she went in, but and as well, the international community has, including the United Nations, has said that more than 30 days in isolation is cruel and unusual punishment and has severe repercussions, particularly on people's mental health. But listening to what's been going on and following what's been going on in Northern Ireland with the case of Price, with other Republicans, isolation seems to be used as a tool of torture. And if it was Syria or Putin or anyone else doing this, you'd have the whole community in uproar. You would have Amnesty writing letters and everyone, you know, asking for regime change and all sorts of stuff like that, but you don't see that going on in terms of isolation being used as a tool in Northern Ireland. So if you can just explain to us briefly a little bit about isolation being used as a tool of torture and why you think the international community is silent on this issue.
Yeah, well, I think maybe we are to blame ourselves for part of this in that we're operating from a fractured Republican base. And I think that when you act, when you come from a fractured base, that we have a situation where our message is not listened to as well as if it was coming from a unified Republican voice. And I think that one of the unifying issues outside of the issue of sovereignty is political prisoners and the treatment which they are receiving. And outside of the high-profile cases of Martin Corey, Marion Price, and whatever, the other prisoners are almost deemed as less important by the media and by the establishment. And, of course, the establishment want to cover this up as much as possible. And I think that our role Republicans is to get the message out, get the story out on the local level in Ireland, but across the world, so that any campaigns at an international level involving the abuse of prisoners, that the abuse of prisoners in Ireland is included. And I would encourage the international community and your listeners to get behind the political prisoners in Ireland in highlighting and putting pressure on from whatever quarter to bring pressure to bear on the British government and on the establishment here to end this corrupt, torturous treatment of political hostages.
Any final thoughts before we go to the next show? What we can do here to support, this is about the situation in Northern Ireland, websites to check out, anything?
Yeah, well, I think that this interview is one of those first steps in not getting our message out at an international level. And as you know, we do have an international officer appointed to deal with like-minded groups across the world. So we're saying very clearly to the groups, do whatever it is you can to highlight and counteract the propaganda of the British government, counteract the propaganda of the Stormont politicians and the Dublin politicians, that the issue in Ireland has not been settled, despite the ongoing efforts of the establishment to say that it is. It is not settled. The sovereignty of Ireland is violated by the British government. It's violated by the Good Friday Agreement. It's violated by those administering British rule. And we will continue to attempt to keep this issue in the public domain. As a consequence of the violation of our sovereignty, we have the ongoing corrupt laws of stop and search and searching children, attacks on people, abusing people. We've had a situation in Derry where the PSNI broke a man's arm in the viciousness of the attack on him. These are the type of things that obviously we need to get out, but we're asking the international people to do whatever they can, not alone in highlighting it, but to bring pressure to bear on the system here to end this type of torture. And in relation to the political hostages, the same, getting their cases highlighted at an international level and pressure to bear on the establishment here to end this vile and corrupt torture and abuse of political hostages. And could I just say thank you very much for having you on your program.
The honor is mine. Before we go to the next show and what have you, I would like to remind people that on the 21st of May, we are having a rally in support of Ecuadorian people's right to determine their own destiny, particularly around the issue of Chevron and the damage they have done and lack of social responsibility. And then after, we are going to have a public meeting about the struggle against colonialism in Northern Ireland, Ecuador, and Venezuela. And we're going to talk about these colored coups based on the Chilean model that they did to Allende in 73 that they're promoting around the world. And I would like to tell you to thank the International Department for the kindness they have shown me. I would like to thank you for taking your time out of your busy schedule, both when I was in Derry and here on the show. And I would also like to thank the lads in Belfast for the kindness that they have shown me. Thank you for being on the show. We are going to go to another Kieran Murphy song, because I don't really know how to use this computer yet. Thank you very much. This is Radio Basics KW 100.3 Sound FM on Free Speech Fridays.
Okay. It's too late.